we get things underway this afternoon by welcoming into the program, I can't even speak, I'm so overwhelmed with the snow as I look out my window here, from Defector Media and the Distraction Podcast, he's David Roth. Hello, David.
Hey, how are you? I'm sorry to hear that it's snowing. We are still in the endless 42-degree and raining stage here in New York City.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy
almost
about that either.
Good.
It does a little bit, and like the first couple times, it was fun, but the thrill is gone for me.
Yeah, that's how it works. But yeah, I heard like a little kid talking to her mom the other day about like all the things that they could do when it snows, and it was very cute. Like the kid literally said "yay" at one point during the conversation. It was, you know, but I felt bad for the mom because the kid was sort of like, "And we can make a snowman and do snow angels," and it was like 47 degrees. She's like, "Yeah, you bet, yeah. Definitely."
Well, what I've learned about as a result of the snow is that I may have raised a Republican inadvertently because my 9-year-old son sees the snow purely as an opportunity to add to his wealth. Do you need me to shovel? Can I go find other people who want me to shovel? What if I clear off your car? What will you pay me to do that?
I think it's great, first of all, that your kid's gone on that grind set. I think that's really excellent that he's out there getting motivated. And I was the same way as a kid, and I don't think anyone would accuse me of having a head for business or a successful career making money. So maybe he'll grow out of it, you know? Maybe you're raising a blogger and you don't even know it yet. But mostly it was just when I was that age, I had, like, first of all, I wasn't in school because it would be, you know, there were still snow days then. And then, you know, I had a lot of energy and I didn't have that much to do. So it was the sort of thing where, yeah, I'll just go to people's driveways, knock on some stranger's door and be like, "Do you want me to do a really bad job shoveling your driveway? Because I can do that."
That's my boy. And that's my boy right there. Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, I think it's great.
So what's happening? Carrie was telling me that is there a Santos problem in your life right now?
Oh, my God, dude. I have been trying to write about the guy for a little bit. And I really got started in earnest late last week. And at this point, I have 1,900 words, almost all of which I hate. Not because I think they're bad. I think some of them are good. But not that many of them are about him. And every day, there's two new things. So I have now I'm at the stage of writing where I have a lot of stuff about macro scale dysfunction that is probably going to have to go because I've written it a million times. And then I have 35 different tabs open, each with whatever the scandal was of that half of a day going back like 2 weeks. So I don't even remember a lot of this stuff.
Well, you're right. It changes constantly.
Get it in there. So if I were to write it, it would look like one of those old Glenn Greenwald columns where there's like update XVII. Like this story also, there's not enough space for even half of it.
Isn't he perfect, though, for the times we live in? And it's not very little of it is about him. It's about, you know, what the Republican Party has become, what our media has become, and I guess what we've become as a nation, that this guy's walking the halls of Congress because that's acceptable now in so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of where I have landed on it. I can't take him seriously enough. I think that there's probably some, you know, real warning signs there, just in the fact that he's still in Congress. Nobody supports him in his district. I mean, he's not going to win again, I don't think. But he's there, and he's not going anyplace. It's not like he's got a lot of other things going on. Because after this, it's back to kiting checks and, you know, doing Glengarry Glen Ross real estate scams to people living on Long Island. But for the time being, I can't get too upset about it, because like if he is a symptom of some very bad social illness, which I think he is, it's like a very funny symptom. Like he himself is such a, he just looks like Mr. Bean to me. Every photo I see of him, he's kind of got that weird smile on his face and he's wearing like a lot of different layers at the same time. Like he looks like a child on school day. And the disconnect between his Twitter presence, which is super swaggering in that conservative style where all of them are kind of trying to post like Trump, but that doesn't work if you're not already famous.
Right.
Then you're just like a weird guy who sees yourself as the center of the universe and is like, a message to all my haters. And everybody's like, I don't know who you are, dude. Like, I don't think there's that many haters out there. But his Twitter persona is a lot of like him being like, don't you go cry about it. And then every time you see him in real life, he looks like a kid who just fell off his bike and is trying not to cry. It's a strange energy and such a strange disconnect between the, I mean, I guess there's something instructive there, but he's such an outlier in so many different ways that I guess I just, you know, it's really more of an appreciation of the fact that we as a culture have done enough things wrong for a long enough period of time that he is possible and he's elected. I think it's uniquely Long Island too.
How many words would you like to get this down to?
I mean, it needs to be shorter than it is now. I think the issue is that I have tried to make it an opportunity to rescue a couple of other posts that I had sort of, well, take everybody deep inside my process here. But it's definitely the sort of thing where I will write 600 extremely heated words, go back and look at it, and just be like, "This, I don't think anybody wants to read this." And I've got a couple of those that I've sort of cobbled together into a type of opening, like sort of lead type bit here. But given that he's the reason why anybody would be reading this, I need to get to him faster. And I also need less stuff about, you know, the various different degrading forces in the culture. Like, I need to pick one. I don't get three, you know? So we'll see. I'll get there tonight, I think. I just, you know, once I liberated myself from the idea of actually having to, or even trying to publish it today, I felt great. So maybe I'll keep that going forward.
We wish you luck with that. It's David Roth joining us on Downtown. Have you caught any of what's going on with Tucker Carlson of late? Because when there isn't that much to talk about, when things are, in the big picture, not going all that badly, boy, you got to dig deep and create things. And Tucker has jumped on a bandwagon that I didn't know was going anywhere, and that's the embrace of smoking.
I was wondering which one you were going to say, because he seemed, I think that whole network has seemed a little bit lost since they had to stop crying about a imaginary crime wave all through the beginning of, like, going up to the election. That didn't work. And then they just sort of had to cast about for stuff that would work. And a lot of the stuff, I mean, Carlson is a special case, but he was doing a lot of material on the different M&Ms.
Oh, yeah.
And their gender identities and stuff. And you could tell that even he was maybe, like, his heart wasn't in it. You know, like at some point when you're sort of out there talking about, you know, they say the peanut M&Ms are genderqueer. Well, I don't think that. Like, you got to respect yourself more than that. Even if you're Tucker Carlson, you know that you could be doing something in life that would be more ennobling. The smoking thing is weird because it fits into a lot of that, a lot of the stuff that he's into, or at least that he talks about on his show, is clearly like fringe, like traditional reactionary types on online, on Twitter, and a lot of other sort of social media spaces talk about this stuff. And it is the people that write for his show, and maybe him, I don't know what he does with life other than hang out in the lake region in Maine. Is that he, yeah, sorry about that. It's really worse for the people in Lewiston, Auburn. You guys are probably.
That's true. Yeah, we're protected
but
here.
He will sort of go on about this stuff that I think is almost impenetrable to normal people. And so the idea that there's, that, you know, THC makes you compliant and tobacco makes you strong. He had a thing for a while about how men need to get more direct sunlight on their perineums. I'm not going to lay out what part of your body that is. It's the part of your body that doesn't get a lot of sun. These are very, very strange concerns. And by being willing to put them on TV or put them on the streaming stuff that he does, I think that maybe they are being made more mainstream, but I am choosing to believe, because I don't think that anybody was really radicalized and became a, you know, perineum suntanning activist off of one or two TV show segments. I think that mostly it just serves to confuse people. Like, you have to remember that Fox News's audience is like 70 and up for the most part on balance. And so this is people who are retired and comfortable, and they want to watch their friend at the end of the day talk about all the things that are bad. and he's like demanding that menthol cigarettes be sold again. I think I would be pretty confused if I were an elderly reactionary and that was what I was getting in my monitors.
I would say, at least though, that's more entertaining to me than hearing the rest of them, whether it's M&Ms or complaining that the government is coming for your gas stove or that Joe Biden has driven up the price of eggs to almost, it's more than gas now, for God's sakes.
Yeah. And that's, and for those of us that drive egg-based vehicles, very popular trend, you'll probably be seeing it on Tucker soon. It's been extremely difficult. Can't even drive around the corner to get an omelet because I can't afford the omelet either. It's very expensive now. The idea of all of this is, I guess it works to a certain extent. I mean, I think that you're, I guess, not trusting your audience very much, but like this isn't an especially trustworthy audience. Like they will take, as Donald Trump once said about Diet Coke, they will keep drinking that garbage, even though it doesn't work. And I think that in this case, though, the stuff, the gas range one was especially weird to me because that all felt like a bit. Very few people have gas ranges, like, and very few newer constructions have them. It's not, we have one. It doesn't work right now. The building had to turn the gas off because they're making repairs, and so I've been cooking off a hot plate with my wife for the last 2 weeks. There's a lot of reasons not to have a gas stove in your house. I think that the idea that people are going to, like, rally around any of this stuff is maybe, like, more secondary to the idea that they just, you can sense when they're getting bored, when they've had the same thing right for too long. They don't want to talk about Jussie Smollett anymore or whatever. They need something new. And in this case, I guess it's just, it doesn't really matter how good it is. It just needs to be something that you never thought to get mad about in the past.
Well, and it all provides a wonderful opportunity for Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, who has so much power now that who knows what he can do in making progress for society, although the first couple of weeks have been largely passing bills that have no chance of going anywhere other than the Republican caucus.
I had forgotten how much of this there is. There's a story that I, like a bunch of other people, I think, was struck by. The state of Iowa was trying to pass these crazy new restrictions on the food that you can get with SNAP benefits, food stamps. And they were beyond like onerous. It was, you can't get uncooked meat, you have to get, it has to be canned meat, you can't get white rice, you have to get brown rice, all very small government stuff, classic small government behavior. And I was reading about it, there's a state law, and a woman who writes about this stuff a lot pointed out that this is very common. It's something like 20 states are going to do stuff like this year. It never passes, and they do it anyway. And it sends, I guess, some sort of message to your voters that if you're such a, you know, if you're a reactionary congressman representing a gerrymandered reactionary district, you can go back to them and say, I tried to make it so that poor people couldn't buy chicken wings at the supermarket, so there'd be more for you. And that's the whole, I guess that's the argument. In this case, the stuff that is going on in the House, I mean, even I think up to and including the threats to the debt ceiling, it doesn't feel like, I think it seems very obviously to be a stunt to me. It's just funny to see that this is the signal that they're sending. Like, first thing that they need to do off the bat is a bunch of weird tax stuff that basically everyone except for people who are hereditarily rich would hate, like a 30% sales tax across the board, which is part of like the proposal that they're considering now. It's a messaging bill, but what a message. Who is that for, I wonder?
It's eluded me trying to figure all that out. Well, let's move to happier things. I hope happier things. Baseball Prospectus has finally given you something you can really write about. You finally get to break down what's right with the Mets.
Yeah. Well, it was. I think they meant it in a kind way. I don't assume that anybody knows. Baseball Prospectus, great website, longstanding. They have a book that comes out every year. This one was just published. It's an annual book. It looks like one of those big, sort of SAT prep guides. And it's got, you know, notes on every player in baseball, essays about the different teams, essays about different topics. I have, for the last 9 editions, written about some bad team every year. And the editors, who I know now, have told me that they basically pick a team that they think is going to make me upset because they like that version of my writing. And so this is how I've done the Angels twice. I've done the Marlins. I've done the Rockies, any team that is sort of confoundingly badly run. And this year they asked me to do the Mets, and it was in the middle of when they asked. The Mets were in first place. They're on top of the world. I mean, they still won 101 games. They were just in the postseason for, you know, 8 hours. And I guess at the time they meant for it to be kind of a, you know, a gesture of goodwill. Like, you know, you wrote about the Marlins twice. We know we shouldn't have asked you to do that. And yeah, so then at the end of the season, when the Mets got bounced out and then had to sort of go through this massive identity crisis during the offseason, it felt less like a gift. It's interesting. I'm happy with how the essay came out, and I do think the Mets are very good. But I had to edit it a bunch of times to reflect whatever was going on with Carlos Correa. And because that took so long and because it was so strange, it still is going to be wrong. Or it's going to be so hedged that it's going to be like a lot of, you know, if they sign Correa, that'd be great. If they don't, it still sends a message. Like that's not exactly the sort of like forceful writing that I'm trying to do. But that was as good as I could do up against the literal, you know, printing date. As much as I've always wanted to do a stop the presses thing, like anybody else has ever written an article, this was closer than I had ever come before, and it didn't feel great.
Well, I love baseball prospectus, though, because it's, of all the baseball previews, it feels like to me it's one of the last ones that approaches baseball with a sense of humor.
Yeah, it's really, I think it's a great site. I recommend it to everybody, both because it has a real personality in terms of, you know, it is funny. It does know its stuff, and all the numbers are there. I mean, if you're into advanced stats and math and stuff like that, you know, it's state of the art in every way. It's just, I think, there's a spoonful of sugar that helps me digest that stuff, which is not naturally something that I have any time with. Like, I'm willing to read articles that have a lot of, like, you know, regression analyses and stuff in them, things that I would ordinarily avoid in my recreational life, strictly because the writing is so good and because the analysis is so good.
Am I a bad person that I experience great schadenfreude whenever the Cowboys season comes to an end too soon?
I don't know anybody that doesn't. I think in this case, too, I know a lot of people that hate the 49ers. And even in that, I mean, there's a lot of, like, friends of mine that are Seahawks fans and stuff. It's, you know, like any sort of divisional rival. I've never really had a great opinion on them one way or the other, but watching especially the way that the Cowboys have washed out the last two seasons, they keep finding new twists on it. It's not the old Cowboys that I hated, where they were sort of either they were smug or they were this like crazy bestriding colossus, like during the Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin years, where they were just, you know, a noticeable tick better than any other team. They're neurotic now, and the Mike McCarthy personality influence has really sort of permeated through the organization, which means that the part of the fun of watching them is finding which hilariously overwrought way they're going to manage to duff it. And watching that last play yesterday where they had Ezekiel Elliott snapping the ball to an otherwise unprotected quarterback in hopes of setting up some sort of elaborate triple hook and ladder play was, I couldn't have been happier. Like, I didn't know that was what I wished for, but watching Ezekiel Elliott snap the ball and then get pancaked and then the play immediately get blown up was, it filled my heart.
It did, and it was a nice balance for me because earlier in the game, I was pulling so hard for their poor kicker to make those field goals because I didn't want him to be the GOAT.
Yeah, that was a rough one. I mean, especially the weird thing, and, you know, if you watched the game yesterday, too, this is Brett Maher, or however he says his name. I'm saying it like he's hosting a show on HBO. But he on his field goal attempts, he looks great. Mm. And he really was. I had him on a fantasy team this year. He's one of the better kickers in the NFL on field goal attempts. But I think he ended it with, like, one for his last six on extra point attempts. Missed one yesterday that was super duper low and wound up getting blocked. And I felt, I don't know, I can't laugh at that. I've seen baseball players with the yips, and I think anybody that has ever had a hard time getting themselves to do something that they know that they have to do can relate a little bit. But yeah, that was a rough one. I was glad to see him. He had two field goals yesterday. Looked great. Would have been good from 50 yards. I hope that he can carry that with him as he enters into an intensive course of therapy during the offseason.
Exactly, along with a whole lot of their fans as well. David Roth.
Yes. Oh,
and the distraction is back, too. That's great news.
Yeah, yeah. This is the podcast I do with Drew McGarry, and we took a month off. We changed producers. We moved from Stitcher to a smaller one called Multitude, which is sort of similar to what we're doing with Defector, in that it was founded by people that worked at big places, didn't like it, left, and tried to do their own thing. And so far, it's been great. We're having Kalen Kaler, our old coworker, formerly of Defector, now of The Athletic, on to talk with us tomorrow, which means that sometime as Wednesday turns to Thursday, you will probably get the inside story on the Eagles pushing Jalen Hurts by the butt on quarterback sneaks, which is like her most recent big scoop. But yeah, it's good. I find that, of all the things that after complaining about having to write a long story about a congressman I find funny, doing a podcast definitely beats working in that regard. It is just nice to sort of talk to a friend for an hour and then know that some other people are willing to listen to it.
Can't wait to hear it, as always. David, great talking with you again. We appreciate it, as always, making some time for us, and we'll do it again soon.
I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me, as always, and have a great week.
David Roth of Defector and the Distraction Podcast.